Community Connections. CKMS. Local sounds, thoughts, passions, and success. Celebrate local. Your neighbor's got a story to tell. Community Connections.
Happy Friday, Waterloo Region. You're listening to CKMS Community Connections for Friday, March the 1st, 2024. In the studio today, we've got Tim Cameron from Camera Noise and Other Things. Hi, Tim.
Hello. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good.
We'll be extending that conversation in just a bit.
Okay.
Let's listen to some Camera Noise right now. This is Hillbilly Heroin. Music by Camera Noise. You were bopping along to the 1-2-3 beat there.
I was, yeah. Somehow it seems uncool to bop to your own record, but I bopped.
Yeah, bopping is perfectly allowed.
Okay,
can't see it on the radio, but we're on YouTube Live as well. So
right, you
know,
so
we're on record for that.
We're bopping on YouTube. Yeah.
That was called Hillbilly Heroin from an album called It's My Party. Where did the name come from?
I didn't have a name for the album until about a week or two before I released it, and I started thinking, oh, I got to come up with a name for it. Because you go through all this, you record the songs, you get everything all that done, you register with SoCan, I got to name the album now, I thought it was done, ah, man. So I think I was doing dishes, and It's My Party, somehow that old Leslie Gore song, It's My Party, popped into my head. And then I was kind of, I think I was humming it, and I just sort of like mispronounced it because I was busy doing dishes and not paying attention to my enunciation, you know, as one doesn't do when one's doing dishes. And I just sort of, id's my party. I went, id's my, and I thought, I admit, I had to go look up what id was again.
Ah.
Hang on, does that work? What is id again?
Okay, so what is id?
I forget now.
Oh, you forget too.
It's like,
no, there's id, ego, and super ego,
I have
no idea what they mean. So.
I think it is the, let me think about this. It's the, like the basic sort of thing that we're born with where we want food or some, I forget, sorry.
Okay.
So let's just.
Perfectly okay.
New subject.
New subject.
Yeah.
So where did the Cameron Noise name come from?
That's just Cameron Noise.
Cameron Noise.
It's just me making noise.
Well, it doesn't sound like noise. It sounds very musical.
Well, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek. But I didn't really know what I was going to do because the first album came out and it was kind of like these funky old Hammond B3 organs and stuff. And
that's what I was thinking. It sounds very Hammond B3-ish.
Yeah,
But it's got this layer on it, a little staticky, a little...
Yeah, sort of crunchier guitars, yes. Yeah. I sort of took all these like disparate musical influences or things that I love from my record collection. So I got Booker T and the MGs,
you know,
and all that kind of funky soul stuff. Jimmy Smith, the jazz guy, who actually was the one who put the Hammond organ on the map as far as jazz playing goes. Because before that, I think it was marketed to churches and for people to sit at home and kind of play in their living rooms, right? And then Jimmy Smith started playing one. I think originally the jazz guys, like the piano players, and I were like, no, we're not playing one of those things. That's a toy, man. Oh, and then he came out and boom. So anyway, so.
When was that?
What? 1950, okay. Something, I think. Yeah, I might be off on that.
I think. Get Booker T in the 60s?
Yeah, 62 would have been when Green Onions came out.
Right.
But if you were listening to Stax, you would have heard him and those guys before then, because they sort of started as a house band. And then there was another band called the Marquise, and they, I think three of the guys in the MGs were in the Marquise as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so all those, Sam and Dave and Otis Redding and all those great songs, it's probably those four guys in the backing band.
Okay.
Plus a couple of horn players, Andrew Love on sax and Wayne Jackson on trumpet. See,
comes back.
It comes back, So I love that stuff. But then I also... you know, was around when the whole sort of power pop thing in the 80s happened. Like, I remember the Smithereens. When I first heard the Smithereens, I thought, these guys, this is it. This is perfect. They've cut away all the... And it was like the hair metal, you know, Eddie Van Heflin kind of stuff going on, right? So, and they were just like jangly Rickenbackers, and they're just wearing jean jackets and leather jackets, and their hair would look normal. And they just look like a bunch of working class guys, but they're playing these really catchy kind of power pop songs. Somebody described them as the Beatles mate AC/DC. So I love that too. So I kind of incorporated that into the camera noise as well as the, you know, the sort of funky organ tone. And that was the first album. I thought, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. The next one might be all space bleepy bloopy noises. I'll just do whatever I want. I call it noise because I thought I'm just going to make sounds, and maybe they won't all be catchy. I'll if I feel like experimenting, I'm going to go. Yeah, I'm going to do it.
Okay. Do you actually have a Hammond B3?
No.
Oh.
Good Lord. I have attempted to lift a Hammond B3, and that's why I don't own a Hammond
B3. Okay. Yeah.
Same with the Leslie speaker.
Yeah, they're wonderful devices. I mean,
They're fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're fantastic. I mean, it's like you basically need a pilot's license to run one of those things because all the
drawbars
and the.
Probably.
If you watch their YouTube tutorials on how to properly play one, and you can sort of like move the drawbars while you're holding a chord, it kind of like you hear the tone shift. But it's an art because you got to know which one of those to push how far in which direction to get the sound you're hearing in your head.
No presets.
No.
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 No automated stops, nothing like that.
Not on the old ones, no.
No.
No. I mean, they had actual vacuum tubes in them and everything.
Yeah, probably, because that's all that was available back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How many are left, do you think? How many M&B3s are left in the world that are still playable?
I don't know. Probably a few thousand. I think they're
over
the whole world, yeah. I mean, in Toronto, I know like three guys, I think, in Toronto that have them.
Really?
And that's just people I know, and I never get out.
Ah.
So if I know three people... There's got to be at least three more in Toronto. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
So don't have to fear for the lack of Hammond B3 music out there.
I don't think so. I mean, there was a time when those and like Fender Rhodes pianos and people were just like tossing them because, you know, the Yamaha DX7 had come along. And then people, 5 years later, they're tossing DX7s, right? So, but people sort of gained an appreciation. So now somebody has a B3, they're polishing it every day and they're tweaking it and they're making sure. And owning one is a lot like owning a British sports car. Because you're constantly, you know, like getting under it with the wrenches.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Have to keep the mechanic in the passenger seat.
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Keith Emerson here, Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Mm.
He would use up a Hammond B3 organ on stage, you know, tossing it back and forth. I mean, that guy must have had some strength.
Yeah.
And, But how would those things ever survive the stage antics that he put them through?
Yeah, well, it would depend on the cue. I mean, the B3 was, I think it was sort of industrially designed. But they had other things like the Mellotrons, which Mellotron was a keyboard that had like sort of tape loops inside, and you would choose what instrument you wanted. And so, but then the most famous Mellotron riff is the opening of Strawberry Fields Forever, where it sounds like a flute, but it's not quite a flute. And so with that you would, you know, they would actually record a flute player playing an A and record him playing an A sharp. and a B. So we record all the notes, and then each note would have its own loop of magnetic tape.
Right.
And then as you push it down, like a little tape head goes on, plays that one note, right?
Right.
And those things were really finicky.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. It's bad enough keeping one head in line with another tape deck.
Yeah.
Never mind 88 of them.
Yeah, yeah. A mid-60s cassette recorder, except there's 88 of them all like crammed in a space that's too small for them to fit in. Yeah.
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 So if you haven't got a Hammond B3, what do you have? What do you play music on?
I just do it all. They're all samples in GarageBand.
Oh, really?
It's not even a fancy program. It's just GarageBand came with the MacBook that I got at the beginning of the pandemic to teach lessons on.
So you're not recording guitar, you're not recording drums, it's all coming from GarageBand?
Well, I do, yeah, the guitar and bass guitar are for real, and then they go through amp simulation, so I can choose Marshall, Fender, you know, any of the famous amp sounds, but that the guitars are actually being played by a human, me.
Okay.
And then with the keyboards, I do sort of musical typing, so you can actually bring up, like, the keyboard of your MacBook, and then like this note is a C sharp and that note is a C, or this, you know.
Okay, so you're playing music on a typewriter style keyboard, not a musical style keyboard.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then doing a lot of editing.
I'll bet.
So, and same with the drums. The drums are boom, psh, boom, psh, boom, like I'm tapping out the drums and then edit them a bit, yeah.
Okay. Well, that leaves like double the work, because not only do you have to record the music in the first place, now you've got to massage it.
It does, yeah, yeah. But I'm in such a limited space where I record that there's no room for the actual instruments. And I'm not, there's no touring going on, there's no, and because, like with the drums, because there's no setting up of microphones or anything, they've got, I think it must be like 20 different drum kits that come with the program. And they're all sampled from things that were already mic'd years ago and sounded good then. So it does save time that way. And the fact that it's not, you know, like if I was actually going to record a drum take, I would have to, or a keyboard take, I would have to, you know, set everything up, play it through, and then trying to edit that would be like cutting and slicing and splicing and pasting. Whereas with the way it is in GarageBand, you can take a single note and just go beep or beep.
Or you just put it in place on what looks like a musical staff.
There's the musical staff. There's also one they call piano roll, and it's like on a grid.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then going up and down changes the pitch of the note, and going side to side changes the timing of the note, like when it comes in. Yeah.
Okay, but that doesn't sound like you're playing music anymore. It sounds like you're programming music.
Well, half and half. I mean, I think playing music or programming music, you know, I would love to be able to hire three guys and we'll do it live off the floor and rehearse it and all the rest of that. But that's just, that takes so much work and money and time too.
Yeah.
Like trying to find a rehearsal space in Toronto for a full band is like, that's a second full-time job just to pay for this. So,
I can imagine.
Yeah. So one of the first tricks I learned years ago is keep the overhead down.
And that's by reducing personnel and reducing the space that you need for creating the music.
Yep.
Yeah. I've got to admit, it sounds great. What you come out with is just wonderful.
And I have played enough bands that I can play those instruments for real. Well, drums and keyboards, I'm a bit, you know, I can get through a party.
Okay.
But
keyboard wasn't your original instrument then?
No, guitar was.
Guitar was.
Yeah.
Okay, and you've played that in bands?
Yes, and bass guitar too.
Yeah.
Probably more bass guitar in bands than guitar, actually, yeah.
Yeah. Can you name any of them, or were they immensely popular?
Any of the bands?
Yeah.
Oh, God, no, not popular at all. Well, let's see. So I lived in Owen Sound for a while. My folks moved there when I was a teenager. I was in a band called Purple Abstract. We were kind of the Black Crows, I guess, I think it was.
Yeah,
we were kind of like them, but like 3 or 4 years before they came along. So it was still, once again, like the hair metal time. And we were doing this kind of rootsy, bluesy rock thing.
Right.
But we had a little following. We played all the bars and pubs around Georgian Bay. There's a band called The Toggles. It was a British Invasion tribute act in the 90s. It was in Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah. So
any archives still available?
Not that I'm going to let anyone hear. that's gonna cost money.
The secret past.
Yes.
Okay, we'll leave it at that then.
Burn it. Yeah.
I'd like to listen to some more music.
Okay.
What do you recommend?
Well, Beatles were always good.
No, I'm thinking Cameron Noise.
Me. I guess, so you got Is My Party queued up?
It's My Party is all there, yeah. How about a new album, right?
How about Edwige?
Ed Wiege, coming right up from Camera Noise, who's in the studio with us. This is Ed Wiege from the It's My Party album. Cameron, showing us how it's done in the studio. Two-finger keyboarding.
Only two fingers. I can't even play a full chord.
But you said it's actually useful, doing it on the computer that way, because there are tricks.
Mm-hmm.
You said something about playing at one tempo and then speeding it up.
Yeah, before you put on any of the real instruments like the guitars or bass, if you start with just the digital instruments, I'm giving away way too many trade secrets here. Take notes. You at home, take notes. You can slow the tempo down. Like, I'll usually put in a drum track, sort of figure out where I want the fills, get that sort of in place, and then put in just chords so I know what part of the song I'm in just from listening to the chord progression. And then when it comes time to put in the keyboard part, you can actually slow down the tempo and type it all in, and then speed it back up to the tempo you're going to release it at, and it brings up the speed of what you typed and everything. So, yeah.
It just makes placing the notes more accurate and more musical.
Yes.
The outcome.
Accurate is a relative term, but yes, in my case, yeah.
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 And so this is one of the longer songs on the album.
It's over 3 minutes.
Yeah, 3 minutes.
I know, it's like I'm writing an opera here.
Generally, I figure that 3 minutes is the typical length for a song. You know, some things go a little bit longer, some things go a little bit shorter. But the Camera Noise material is all more around the 2.5 minute mark. Is that something you're doing intentionally?
Sort of. Yeah. It's kind of that you know, power pop aesthetic. Like, you know, get in, make it a fast song, really catchy, and all right, we're done. You know, and I get to, if I figure, you know, I've done three verses, that's enough. You know, the chorus has come up three times. Okay, let's not beat this into the ground, folks. Right, let's get out of here now. Yeah. Right.
I guess you've got that with instrumental music where you don't have the lyrics going over, giving you, you know, a story or.
Yeah, lyrically, there's no kind of story arc. I do try to do things with the music itself. So, like, you know, the last verse comes up, and there might be a second keyboard part playing a harmony above that wasn't there in the first two. Yeah. You can kind of layer things a little bit, so there is a sense of it's going somewhere instead of just being stuck in a rut. Yeah. But even within that framework, I think, you know, I tend to, if anything, I will err on the side of ending a song too soon instead of going on too long.
Leave them wanting more.
Yeah. Yeah. And leave me wanting to rest my fingers.
So the lack of lyrics. I mean, the last bunch of Cameron Noyes albums that I've heard have no lyrics. None of them.
So far, it's just an instrumental project,
which does us well, because we have lots of instrumental music that we can now fill in between shows.
Right.
But how does that carry over into commercialization?
Well, it's been handy. Like, you know, when I did the TC folk punk stuff, the lyrics I wrote, I tended to be, you know, like, quite wordy, and I didn't want a cliche. And if there's a line that didn't work, like for the last couple of TC folk punk albums, for every line that you heard, there were four other lines that were in that spot and got scratched off the notepad. You know, because of how much I invested in the lyrics, that would only work if somebody was like. Spoke really good English and was familiar with, you know, certain turns of phrase or certain colloquialisms or whatever, right? So, because there'd be little puns and jokes and stuff hiding there. So that, a lot of that would mean nothing in Japan. And so with the Cameron Noyes stuff, it's a little more kind of universal. And I like that. Like, you know, there are people who go, oh, kind of, there's no lyrics. And there are radio shows I've contacted out there who go, oh, we don't play instrumentals. Like,
really?
Yeah, which I think is bizarre. Like there are, and some of them kind of do like a lot of, you know, retro stuff. They mix up stuff from all different genres and years and everything, but no instrumentals. Again, like if you just made a list of the songs they're not going to play, like Hawaii Five-O theme, you know, anything by Link Wray, no Booker T and the MGs. It's like, really?
Yeah.
It's like no instrumentals. So that's a weird policy for them to have, but yeah.
Maybe it's in their license for broadcast, you know.
Or maybe they have nothing to say themselves, so they don't want too much instrumental music. But I was thinking I should send them some, you know, I should like recut some songs and send them like, oh, here's Hard Day's Night with the Beatles. I took out the guitar solo for you. It's okay for your show now. Because that's instrumental, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an odd way of looking at stuff.
I
tend to appreciate the instrumental stuff, not just as additional music that we can put in between shows, but because I very rarely pay attention to the lyrics when there is a song with lyrics. So I've had guests in, you know, who spend most of their time writing the lyrics and just adding some music over the end of it. You know, it's poetry set to music.
Yeah.
And I have to sadly tell them, you know, I haven't really listened to your lyrics, but the music's great.
And I wonder why I find that too. And me being like a guy who writes lyrics, I think maybe because I've just been disappointed too many times over the years and growing up listening to Top 40 radio and that, and the lyrics were usually dumb. Mm-hmm. And after a while you go, oh, it's got lyrics? Oh, they're probably dumb. But I love the chorus, you know. Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, I guess we can get into like what part of the brain reacts to lyrics and what part of the brain reacts to melody and what part of the brain reacts to, you know, whatever else, the rhythm. You know, I guess maybe if we went way back in human evolution, we'd find that the first things were pretty much all instrumental, smacking rocks together.
Yeah.
And the only lyric would be ow when you got your thumb between the rocks. You know, beyond that, nothing.
Yeah. So you've written music. You mentioned TC Folk Punk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it took me ages to realize that the TC folk punk music that we had in our library was actually the same guy as Cameron Noyes.
I know.
And you know, but there's some similarity. I mean, there's some instrumentation similarities for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and I've done. There are two versions of some songs. There's the TC folk punk one, and the TC folk punk thing was for those of you who haven't heard it yet, which would be. Most of you, the TC folk punk thing was like I took the inspiration from Billy Bragg, who was kind of like a one man punk band, and I think some of that sort of came down to the financial necessity of trying to be a working musician in Toronto as rehearsal space got more expensive and you know, right. hiring a van or whatever to get to a gig because you've got a drummer got more expensive. Like those, I started to trim those things away. And finally, it was just me and the electric guitar and all these fast kind of power pop punky songs that I had in my repertoire. I went, okay, I'm doing the gig like this. So that was the TC Folk Band. I was going somewhere with that. I forgot.
That was
TC Folk Band.
I was leading up to the question I have for everybody. When you're writing music with lyrics,
right.
what do you do first? Music or lyrics?
It depends. I would have something pop into my head. A turn of phrase would pop into my head. I'm having a conversation. Somebody, you know, cracks a joke and I go, ooh, that'd be a good song lyric. Or sometimes I would just wake up. There's this little period, and Paul McCartney and other people talk about this little period where you're just falling asleep or just waking up in the morning
right.
and there's a song playing. And so many times I would wake up, this still happens now, I'll be having a dream and there's like a radio playing in the background of the dream. I sort of wake up and go, oh yeah, it's songs on the radio. And in the dream, I know what the song is because everybody knows what the song is. I wake up and then I go, wait a minute, I don't know what that song, what is that? So I've had a few and then a couple of them where I thought, that's pretty good, but I must have nicked it from somewhere and I'll just play it for everybody I know. And they go, nah, I never heard it before, but it's good.
Okay.
Yes.
So then you've got the music, and then you put the lyrics to it? Or is it that you hear the lyrics as you're dreaming?
I don't tend to hear the lyrics. Or if I hear the lyrics, they're weird sort of dream lyrics, like just repeating some nonsense phrase over and over again or something like that. And I'll go, yeah, I can't use that phrase.
A little bit of self-censorship there?
Yeah, it's like that's something about a penguin eating a sandwich. I don't know. What am I going to do with that?
Yeah, that's not going to be top 40 material, I don't think.
Not really. No. Well, Antarctica maybe, but not so much up here. Yeah.
Does TC Folk Punk still perform?
I haven't really. I mean, the last TC Folk Punk gig I did was about a month before the pandemic came along to crush us all. I've done a duo gig with a friend of mine. That was just sort of like for a little street festival in Toronto, and it was basically me doing TC Folk Punk with a guy sort of hitting brushes on a snare behind me.
Okay.
But we called ourselves the Weasels because so this friend of mine, James Clark, James Clark Institute. This is James Clark. We're really good friends. And James Clark Institute are fantastic, and their new album's just come out. It's produced by Mo Berg. So
plug.
Go check out those guys.
I have to acquire that and put it in the library.
Yeah, if he hasn't sent it, I'll tell him to send it.
Yeah. And actually, anybody can send us music. Send it to office@radiowaterloo.ca. I'm backlogged like you wouldn't believe. So if you're Canadian, put CanCon in the subject line. That'll draw my attention to it. If you're from Waterloo Region, put KWCon in the subject line, and that'll get my attention even faster. And I'll get it on the air for you and possibly have you come into the studio and talk about it at some point.
If you're in Bob's house, just put the address. That'll really get his attention. So James Clark and I had this this Beatles tribute duo that we did about 15 years ago or something called the Weasels, but it's spelled Weez.
Okay.
Weasels, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a joke at our lousy vocals, but.
And that played live gigs?
That did live Weasels? Gigs, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we did a lot of like British pubs and stuff like that.
Okay.
And
I guess a Beatles tribute would gravitate towards the British pubs. That makes sense.
It was easy to sell. Yeah, you just walk in. Hi, we're two guys. We just play Beatles songs.
Yeah.
No explaining beyond that.
Right.
Like, sure.
Come in Friday.
Yeah, come in Friday. Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah.
Exactly. So TC Folk Punk, we've got something on deck here called Honey, What's the Deal? From the Lamest Fast Words album.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Lamest Fast Words, the album was done with a fella named Dave. I'm going to forget Dave's last name because there were a bunch of Daves in this band that all had similar last names. Anyway, Dave. Hi, Dave. Sorry, blanking out. Haven't seen your moment. And so what happened was I had a gig that afternoon at a coffee shop, and they sort of pay you in Americanos. So I was like, you know,
okay.
bigger cups than this.
Yeah.
So I finished that and went straight from there to the studio, and I'm just like, you know, plug in, go. He pushes the record button. I did the whole album one take, like 2 hours.
The whole album in one take.
Done.
Wow.
In 2 hours. Boom, 12 songs. Yeah. So this was the last one. And I think the running order of the album is the order I recorded them. I'd already figured out the running order.
Wow.
And I just like went, boom, go. And we would stop and play it back for a minute. I go, yeah, it's good. Next one. And then, but what was really cool, he was using Universal Audio plugins and such. And so there were two, the guitar signal was split. So it went into a real amp, a little Fender Champ that was off in one corner, sort of in this behind these dividers in the corner of the studio. And then the other line went straight into the board. And then with that, what we did was later when it came time to mix, he would sort of bring in different amplifier sounds. So each song sort of has its own sonic fingerprint. So it doesn't all sound like it was recorded in one go. It sounds, you know, there's more reverb in this one. This one sounds like it was in a small room. This one sounds, you know, big reverb place, hallway, you know, recorded in. So
all added in post.
All added in post, yeah. Yeah, but it sounded great.
Yeah.
Dave Meisner.
Dave Meisner.
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's see if I can dub that in the podcast.
Would you please? Okay.
So here we go.
Yeah.
Honey, what's the deal? QQ Folk Punk, who is really Tim Cameron. And well, let's have a listen. What's the deal? TC Folk Punk with a little sting at the end there. Lots of energy in that. I can tell those Americanos were there.
Yeah. I think I'd only absorbed one of them fully into my system by that point. The others were still coming. So yeah, the caffeine was mounting.
I wasn't listening to the lyrics, as I am wont not to do.
I've forgotten that.
Yeah, you've forgotten the lyrics
then? Who needs them?
All right.
baby.
Yeah, that's good lyrics, you know. That an owl from the Smashing Rocks.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a band name for you, the Smashing Rocks.
The Smashing Rocks.
Oh, dear. The
Rolling Stones,
I see the wheels
pumpkins
turning in Tim's head over here.
Yeah. I just need a sound to put with it. I have more band names than I have sounds for bands.
I think there's a band name generator online someplace.
Yes, so. I've seen a few of them, yeah. And Henry Rollins, no, sorry, Jello Biafra did this the spoken word album in the late 80s, and he goes into this whole thing about band names. He goes, band names, and he starts rhyming off band names, and some of them are hilarious. He goes, I got a great band name for you, Mondale. Because at the time, he had to be there, but yeah, Walter Mondale was running for president in 1984, 88 or 84.
88 maybe?
No, 84, because he ran against Reagan in the second term. So they say, you know, all the guys in Deep Purple look like Walter Mondale now anyway. They should just change their name to Mondale. And he's describing the banner with the skulls on it coming down. Mondale, right. I don't know.
Had to be there.
Yeah. I'm trying to regurgitate something I heard 30 years ago on a record one night at somebody's party. I shouldn't do that. We'll edit that out.
What do you have next? What is planned in the future of TC Folk Punk, future of Camera Noise?
No TC Folk Punk stuff. It was a live thing, and when the pandemic happened, like a lot of the regular gigs that I played went out of business.
Yeah.
And the Camera Noise thing is now, thanks to the internet, you can have an audience, you know, kind of virtually. It was getting hard to drag people out to shows.
Did you do that? Did you do any online performances?
No, I never did. Really fun. There's a thing called Concert Window. It was a website, and you could do, and it was great. And they sort of finally folded up shop about 4 months before the pandemic happened.
Oh.
And when the pandemic came along, it was like, oh, where's Concert Window now? This is great, because there was this tip jar system, and it was I can't remember all the details now, but I remember thinking at the time it was really well thought out. So Concert Window disappeared. So I never did get a chance to do it. I haven't done any online, I think partly because in my apartment there's just nowhere to really set up a camera where there isn't, you know, junk behind me.
Yeah. I'm just amazed at the number of musicians that managed to pivot from performing live to performing on camera. Because, you know, there's a whole new layer of tech there that they have to deal with. And that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've just got the little camera on the laptop, and some of them get into, I guess it doesn't really matter. I mean, a good performance is a good performance, even if the technology is a bit primitive, the energy and everything.
You can hear through the low quality sound, you know, to listen to the music, not the acoustic errors that are taking place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's the vibe that comes across. Yeah. But I think I would still want better cameras and better microphones and stuff if I was going to do it. So
then the future for Camera Noise is studio production.
Yeah. Yeah. I started working on the next album. I'm trying to do one every 6 months, six songs each time. Yeah. It's almost like I'm putting out a full album every year. You get side one in January and side two in the summer because nobody has time to listen to 12 songs at once anymore.
And where do you find the time to write all this and to perform it and then?
Well, I've got unfinished melodies going back to when I was like 16 years old. I've got cassette tapes just filled with these things. Ah. So I've got all these unfinished melodies.
How'd you do that? On the guitar?
Yeah. I would
riff really on the guitar and then into the cassette recorder.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just me
Keith Richards did that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A lot of, cassette recorders were such a boon when they came along, long before I started using them, of course. But I've heard that, that the portable tape player, like Keith Richards and other people who first got their hands on them, were like, this is great.
Yeah. If it hadn't been for a portable tape recorder like that, we wouldn't have Satisfaction.
I know. Because he had no memory of recording it. He just did it. He was half asleep. But once again, that's one of those, he's just in dreamland. Right. He wakes up,
And probably the most famous guitar riff in history.
Somebody compared it to the rock and roll equivalent of the opening of Beethoven's Fifth.
Yes.
Ba-ba-ba-ba. Yeah.
Everybody recognizes it.
Yeah.
Within the first couple of notes, too.
Yeah. You just need the first two buzzy.
Yeah. And you know immediately what's coming after that.
Yeah.
So many covers.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had anybody do covers of Camera Noise or TC Folk Punk?
There's a fellow named Frank Macaque. He's another kind of folk punky Billy Bragg type guy in Montreal, and we've become friends over the years. And he did For the Lucky Ones, which is a song I put out on, I think it was on Lamest Fast Words, I think. So he recorded a version of that 10 years ago, I think. Yeah. One or two other people have. I can't. I haven't made millions of dollars in royalties, so that's why I'm just bit. But it's always cool when somebody, you know.
Yeah, I know. Somebody's appreciated the music enough to want to reproduce it.
Yeah. And sometimes I do have people say, "Oh, I got, you know, I wrote this song, but I got the idea from that song of yours. So that was really cool. Okay, I think so that's, I'll take that as a compliment too.
Yeah.
If you even inspire somebody, just take an idea and then run with it in their own direction. In a way, that's even better, because then, you know, you sort of get a sense of their spin on the same idea.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've got this huge back catalog of cassette tapes that you want to plow your way through and produce every 6 months or so.
Yeah.
Do you have musician's block? Ever get a point where you know you want to do something, you're sitting in the studio and nothing comes?
Not really. The great thing about sort of recording at home and being my own engineer is that I can, like, if I come up with an idea and it's not great, I'll know it later and I'll replace it with a better idea.
Ah.
So yeah, and I think that's one of the other great things about recording at home. Like when you sort of book studio time, there's a certain amount of pressure. You've got to be on your game that day, right? And if you're doing vocals, don't catch a cold and all the rest of that. And so I used to be sort of at the mercy of that because I didn't record at home. But when you record at home, you sort of, you know, like the computer's there and I just got to fix this one guitar thing. How much time I got? Yeah, 15 minutes. I'll just do that and I'll go make lunch, you know.
And so
you can do it in tiny little
chunks. Don't have to commit to doing a four-hour session.
Yeah, you don't have to have these big blocks, and you have to be like fully awake and full of Americanos.
So, exactly.
I think I'm still buzzing for those Americanos 10 years ago, actually. So yeah,
it was very punchy music. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And in fact, all the camera noise music has that energy level.
The energy has always been important to me. Like I remember, you know, when the sort of new wave punk thing came along, and I was sort of becoming aware of top 40 music. I was still fairly young, and you know, this little stuff from the mid late 70s. And I sort of went, yeah, okay, it's a rock song, and I guess everybody likes it. Everybody in my class likes it, so I guess I like it too. Something missing. Like there's something like those old records by the Beatles, and those guys had something that's not here. And then when I first heard, I get, because punk didn't really come through on the radio, so it would have been new wave,
okay,
like Elvis Costello,
yeah,
and Get the Knack. I remember when the first time I heard the Knack,
okay,
I just went, that's what I'm doing for a living.
I was boom in community radio during the punk era, so
yeah.
I got my punk through the community radio at
yeah.
that point, so
yeah,
that's where it was.
Yeah, but it was just I thought, okay, so the priority has shifted now where energy is the main thing. And technical prowess is like further down the list. I mean, lots to be said for both. But I thought, okay, so the energy is what I liked. I was always attracted to that. So first rule, don't make it boring. And that's probably getting back to why my songs are usually 2.5 minutes long. It's going to get boring.
Yeah. So comparing it to punk music, you know, the higher the energy in punk music, the shorter the song. So you get your most pithy guitar solos and whatnot in 59 seconds worth of music, which the CRTC doesn't even count as a song. So
it's a commercial, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So do you find that happening too? The more Americanos you have coursing through your blood, the shorter the music you're producing?
I don't know. Maybe it should be shorter. Maybe it should be more Americanos. You tell me. I don't know. 2.5 minutes, that's still a bit long, Cameron. I just give a song whatever it needs, as anybody does. You know, if you're paying attention, you go into it and you think, okay, it's going to sound like this, but then you record and go, oh no, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Fix it.
Yeah. And you do go back and rework old music. So you said you did a couple of TC folk punk songs again as Camera Noise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And so that's actually how I figured out that Tim Cameron and TC folk punk may have something in common.
Yeah, yeah. And I wasn't really trying to hide the fact that they were related. I just stopped doing one and started doing the other, pre-pandemic and pandemic and post-pandemic, if there ever will be a post-pandemic.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't seem to have picked up entirely yet, does it?
No. There's still people dropping from it in Ontario every week and that, so yeah.
And as far as performances go, not every place is open for business any longer.
Yeah.
Although I've seen a couple of new spots crop up in the last year or so.
Yeah.
It is coming back.
Yeah, there are some new ones, like a lot of new ones in Toronto have cropped up in the last year or so, yeah.
But you're not planning on doing live performances again in the near future.
It's funny. I mean, the TC folk punk thing, I don't have anything against it, but there is just this little kind of been there, done that, and there are so many sounds I can do with the Camera Noise thing. I feel like there's just way more to explore with the instrumental stuff.
Right.
bill, so yeah.
And it's something that you can't perform in person. The camera noise stuff that you spend so much time post-producing
right.
isn't something that you can easily do live.
No, unless, I mean, I could go out with three backing tracks and I'll just play guitar along with it.
Mm.
Or I can put the guitar track on and just not plug in my guitar and stand there.
Just play the music and have the presence, but
yeah,
no just, actual performance there.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just hold up the sign with the name of the song. You are now listening to Edwige.
You know, that's how radio works.
Is it good? Where this? I didn't get any signs.
Yes, yes. You've done other stuff before DC Folk Punk, before Camera Noise.
Mm-hmm.
The first introduction that I had to your music was as the Bumblebats.
Oh,
and
yes.
And there's a story.
There is a story, yeah. Okay, so the Bumblebats actually would be that this tiny little wedge between TC Folk Punk and Camera Noise.
Oh, okay. That's I had the order wrong then.
Yeah, because it was the very beginning of the pandemic, and the Bumblebats was a project I did with three other guys who I can't name for contractual reasons, but
yeah.
I had worked in this vintage guitar shop, and there were, you know, people of different, you know, levels of fame or whatever you want to call it would come through the place. And you get talking to some of them, and after a few years, like every time a certain band would come through town, a couple of guys would stop in and hang out for a while. And so I had this idea for this kind of power pop instrumental thing, but all kind of guitar driven, with the keyboards. And I mentioned to a couple of guys, and they went, oh, that'd be really cool. You know, you sort of get their emails and stay in touch and all that, catch their shows when they're in town, or if I happen to be in Montreal, I'd hook up with one of them and go for a coffee or something. But so the pandemic came along, and everybody's panicking, and we thought, well, we had this idea, let's start mailing files back and forth to each other and see what happens. So that was basically it. We thought, well, gigs are gone, because it seemed like it was the end of the world when it first all happened. Because gigs were disappearing and body bags were piling up and everything. It was insane for the first couple of months, as you remember, right? So, yeah, we thought, well, let's do this thing. We can all hide in our houses and not see other humans, but still sort of make this album that we all agreed would be a fun thing to do. So, yeah.
And the Bumblebats EP? I've got four tracks here, so.
Yeah, that would be an EP, yeah. Standing in the Shadows of Moncton.
Standing in the Shadows of Moncton, this is a song called Balaclava.
Yep.
Yeah. And punchy music from the Bumblebats.
The Bumblebats, yes. Yeah.
Tim Cameron and three unnamed guitar players, all of them?
No, drummer and bass player. I was rhythm guitar and some lead guitar.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking that it's one of the first bits of your music that I played on the radio here. Mm. And it's nice music because I get to talk over it for a bit.
Right.
Yeah, that's the advantage there.
We were talking over it just now.
Definitely
we were. Nobody else heard it, but it was just us, but yeah.
I noticed that there's a similarity in the sound of the guitar and the sound of the Camera Noise B3 organ.
Right.
And you said that you have a way of achieving that.
Yeah, well, with the Camera Noise stuff, because especially with the first album, because the rhythm guitar sound that started hitting the chords was very, very, very heavy sounding. Yeah. I found that just a regular B3 Hammond sound was kind of getting lost in the mix. I thought, this needs a little more bite. So I ran it through one or two guitar distortion pedals. And that's one of the great things about the whole GarageBand thing. You can take this Hammond organ and run it through guitar pedals and put it into that kind of amplifier, okay. But then take that signal and put it through that bass thing over there.
So are these software guitar pedals, or are you actually converting to...
They're all software, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And I guess it would be more honest to have real guitar pedals and everything, but sometimes you never know. I'm not the greatest at sort of mixing and mastering, so sometimes... You know, if you use an actual pedal or you actually play a part, you're kind of committed to that sound and that tone and everything. And then later on, if it doesn't work in the mix, then you start pulling your hair out. With this, you can actually go back and rewrite history, basically. You can record
something. Subtracting something off a track you've already laid down.
You can continue to adjust the track after you've recorded it.
And not just with a little bit of equalization, but by actually adding and subtracting effects after the fact.
Yeah. Like I could change pedals, or I could change, like on a guitar track, I could just change, put a completely new amplifier, or,
Okay, that's pretty remarkable. That's a different skill set from being a musician, though, isn't it?
Sort of, yeah. There's enough kind of computer geekitude, I guess, there's a bit of that, yeah. And I know, I heard somebody once argue that, okay, Mozart never used these things, but if Mozart were around now, would he? And you got to think, probably, because, you know, like anybody, like more modern examples would be like David Bowie. You know, just anything new came along, he'd be all over it. And how do you use this? So I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, we go back to what we were saying earlier, but like the most honest way is to have four guys live in the studio who tour as well. But
but there's overhead to that.
Yeah. Those days are done, yeah.
But you do play guitar. You do play an actual instrument, guitar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and bass, yeah.
What kind of guitar?
Oh, I have two. I have a Rickenbacker 310. Which is one that I bought when I was 19 years old, and it's my pride and joy.
Ah.
It's a weird little thing, though. It's a very temperamental little beast. It's a very short scale, but it's the same size as John Lennon's.
A short scale meaning?
The size of scale, like where the end of the neck is, basically. So
it has fewer frets than a regular guitar?
It has, I think, the same number of frets, but they're all squeezed in closer together.
Okay.
Yeah, and in the case of this one, if you were to... say put a capo on a regular guitar around the fourth fret, that's where this one is, like where the third fret is. Well, that's where the headstock is on the Rickenbacker. It's the same size as the one John Lennon played. And I was, you know, huge Beatles fan.
Yeah.
And I was about 18 years old and went to Steve's Music one time. I was visiting Toronto and they had one on the wall, like the John Lennon model. I thought, oh, I've never played one of those. I got to try one. First thing I noticed is I go to play it there and go, hang on. There's no frets there. I'm like, oh, wow. And suddenly all those little like things Lennon could do with his pinky, and I went, oh, that's how he did that. Because he could reach it, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so I thought, oh, I got to get one of these. But I got like different color, different options on it, two pickups instead of three. I wanted it to be as like the same outline and size, but as un-Lennon looking. Because, you know, you show up at a gig, and everybody's like, oh, play some Beatles.
Yeah, well,
but I wrote these. So it's that one, and then I have a Godin. It's a model they've... discontinue, but it's basically like a Les Paul Junior. It's just single pickup, one volume, one tone, just a solid workhorse. Yeah, so it's the two of them that you hear. Yeah,
you only have two guitars. I mean, I've spoken to guitar I've spoken to guitar players that have dozens.
Well, and I worked at a guitar shop for a few years too.
What you do there?
Well, mostly bought guitars.
Well, mostly bought guitars.
on the employee discount, yeah. No, I made a list one time of all the guitars I've owned. I think it was like 75 guitars and 40 amps or something like that. And once I actually wrote them down, because you go, okay, what band was I in? Where was I living? Who was my girlfriend? Who, you know, you sort of all these little things that, you know, it would sort of demarcate what guitar did I have at that point in my life, you know, priorities. Yeah, and I wrote them. Once I saw it, I thought, okay, I got to stop doing this. This is nuts. This is a crazy hobby. So I didn't have all 75 at once. I think the most I ever had at one time was probably 8. So, yeah.
8 guitars is plenty.
That's enough.
You only got 2 hands, so.
Yeah. I know, yeah. Only one strap. You can only wear one at a time, you know.
Yeah. Right. Hour's up.
No,
can you believe that?
Really?
Yeah, really.
Wow.
that.
That was fast. That was great.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I had a great time. Thanks for having me over.
Thanks for coming in, Tim Cameron.
Yep.
Cameron Noise, TC Folk Punk, and a Bumblebat.
And a Bumblebat, yes.
You're listening to CKMS Community Connections for the 1st of March, 2024. My name is Bob Jonkman. CKMS Community Connections is a production of Radio Waterloo, sponsored by Radio Waterloo. Executive producer is Jennifer Strong. Associate producer is Jeff Stager. And the music you're listening to right now is written by Steve Todd. We are every Monday at 11 o'clock and alternate Fridays at 3.